Hello, everyone, and welcome back. We've been on a little bit of a break, but we are here again, and we have for you today some brackets. Welcome to the Middlebrow Bracketeer. All right, Pete, let's play a little game. This game is called Grab Bag Speed Bracket. We're going to go fast and loose, and we're going to have a little bracket. I'm a frequent purveyor of brackets. I'm always making brackets for things where you kind of have different things go up against each other, and then you arrive at a champion at the end.
I just have to say, there's nothing more Danny than bracketing every subjective challenge in his life. It's just like, I need to impose structure on the structure list in order to evaluate it. That's like almost everything you do.
This one is going to be real mixed. It's going to be a grab bag. There's going to be a lot of different things. Typically, the first two in each bracket are going to relate to one another, but then after that, it's going to start getting real mixed up. So what you're going to need to do is you're going to need to have a fairly flexible understanding of your set of standards on which you're deciding, because you're going to get something. You're not going to be able to have one thing. You know, it's not so much of like, it's not going to necessarily be an is it better kind of thing. You're just going to have a gut reaction as to which thing you prefer, because it's going to start to get a little.
Is this like unconscious bias test?
Not really. It's really just a preference type thing on what do you prefer. Well, let's get started and you'll see.
All right, let me see.
You'll start to get the hang of it. And we're both going to answer this. So we'll both end up with, you know, an answer. So first of all, Pete, live sports or live music?
Live sports, without question, is the most exciting thing you can probably, it's the most exciting crowd you can be a part of.
I agree. I also choose live sports. I love live music, but there's a little bit of a head game that goes on with me with live music where it's like, well, I've heard the album so many times and now here it is live and what's different or what's better. Whereas with live sports, it's very clear that you're experiencing something very different than what you see on TV. So live sports is fabulous. Number two, getting rid of the standard system and moving to metric, or getting rid of daylight savings. Which one would you do?
I would get rid of daylight savings.
Why?
It's weird and it's antiquated and everybody hates it. And here where I live in the northern latitudes of the United States, it's a real problem. It makes things very dark and it makes things very light, very late. And I would like to just pick one and go with it. As far as standards go, standards, I cannot think in anything else. And when people say like, well, the United States, like just use the state, like no. The United States uses metric and standard. I can think in metric and use metric almost all the time. If you do anything of any kind of precision measurement, even in construction or anything, you're going to use metric. Everyone in the United States uses both, and I think we can just keep going with that.
I agree with you. I'm also getting rid of daylight savings because daylight savings has really practical on-the-ground consequences that affect my life. My kids get grumpy. My sleep cycle gets all screwed up. It's a huge pain in the ass. There's no reason for it. The metric system over standard, to me at this point, is just an aesthetic choice. You know, it's like well, why do you use this ridiculous thing? It's like, who cares? It works fine.
It's kind of like having the House of Lords. You know, I go look at like the Senate or the House of Lords and I'm like, this is ridiculous, useless, a complete waste of time and not worth doing. There are better systems, but it's kind of what we do.
But who cares?
So we have it. That's and right. And you just, it's weird and funny and we do it.
Okay. A nice hotel or a nice dinner?
Oh.
How would you rather spend your date night money?
Dinner.
Me too. I love nice dinners. It's a wonderful thing for me.
But we're talking like big dinner though. Not like we went out to like a nice dinner, but like if you make dinner like an event of a date and it's nice and you're putting, so if you were going to go to a hotel and let's say in a major US city or even a just medium to large US city, a hotel is going to cost you what? $300 to $500, let's say.
For a nice hotel, $300 to $500. For a really nice dinner, $300 to $500, but you can do a lot with $300.
That's what I'm saying. It's like the $300 to $500 at the restaurant goes a lot farther than the $300 to $500 at the hotel.
But even if they were of equal quality and the spending power was equal, I don't care at all about staying in a nice hotel. It just doesn't do anything for me. Whereas going out for a nice dinner is one of the best experiences in my life. I just love it. I do it all the time. I love to spend money on things. I love to get the appetizers, get some drinks, get, you know, stuff paired with your.
Yeah, get a bunch of recommendations, start a conversation, just get it going. Let's just have this event.
Enjoy each thing. Get to dessert. Have a dessert. Have a brandy or a coffee or whatever your thing is, and just sort of let the thing spin out for like 3 hours. I just absolutely love that.
There's something really fun about going through the formalities of eating. where you do all those pieces together. Like, okay, this is how, like, I don't know, rich people a long time ago used to take fancy meals, right? So I'm just going to do it again. Like the coffee afterwards and then a brandy after that. And that is just like, it works, man. It's just all, oh, like, it's this best. Has been thought through. It comes together.
My wife prefers nice hotels to nice dinners. She doesn't really care about nice dinners, but she really wants to stay in nice places. So we have a little bit of a conflict on that. Number four, blind taste tests or prefix menus. What do you prefer?
I guess blind taste tests for just the reason that I don't eat shellfish, and where I live, I can't get a prefix menu without making a bunch of changes to it. It's like a practical reason. Like if you don't eat shellfish and you live where I do, which is one of the shellfish capitals of the world, and it's like, here's what we're gonna start with: scallops, followed by a bed of crushed up oysters stuffed into a crab, you know, and you're just like, oh my god, I can't. It's like that Simpsons where they go to like the all you can eat fisherman place, and Marge is like, I'm allergic to shellfish. Is there anything that doesn't? And he's like, the sea captain's like, nah. She's like, what about the bread? Does the bread have fish in it? And he's like, aye. That's what it's like going out to eat for me. So no, preview menu, no. I guess like the blind taste test and tell them up front, like, it's between these two different kinds of lobster. I can be like, nope.
This is a really hard one for me. I am very, very passionate about prefix menus. I really like them. It's an extension of the going out to dinner experience that we talked about before, where you don't even have to make the decisions. You just lay back into a lap of luxury of paired wines and, you know, things that have been picked out for you. And you get the shellfish problem and the seafood problem worldwide, because I don't like seafood really at all. And so I'm constantly having to make changes, but the changes are usually not that bad. If you just say
prefix menu, I mean, I feel like it's like totally like our main dish is lobster. I'm like, I can't have it.
Well, if the main dish is lobster and you're at a seafood restaurant, that's one thing. But if you've got 9-course thing and like 3 of the courses are seafood and you just say, instead of seafood, give me vegetarian, that usually works out really nicely. Every place will have good vegetarian options. So I also choose blind taste tests just because I'm a passionate proponent of blind taste tests in general. And I try to work.
You really are. Let's do it. Tell me this.
I want to start a bar that's built around the concept of blind taste tests. So you come into the bar and we say, you got a blind taste test of gin or rum or whatever.
How about we build a regular bar, but we do blind taste test for a certain time every day?
That's a good idea. Blind taste test happy hour.
Yeah, it's like a happy hour blind taste test. Like, okay, drinks are half off, but you're going to have to talk to Danny and you're going to have to make choices without having the answers.
Or even like a blind taste test night, like Tuesday is blind taste test night.
Yeah. Like you do like a trivia night and you're just like the trivia master, just cracking down. Like, here we go. You're going to taste this and versus this. And we're going to do you could just put up a big whiteboard and draw your bracket on it. And then throughout the entire night, you could just come up with what the best one is.
There you go. It could be blind taste test night or bracket night or what have you. Number five, alcohol versus coffee.
Well, alcohol is so varied and is useful for like half the day. Although I think caffeine is one of the most useful things human beings have ever discovered. And I think I'd take coffee. I think I could live without booze before I could live without coffee.
I'm taking alcohol just because I don't drink coffee. My system can't handle it.
Oh, so this is a trick question.
Well, for me,
that's like my pre-fee menu with the shellfish.
I think alcohol is great. And you say alcohol is varied. That's interesting because alcohol and caffeine have one thing in common, which is that it's essentially a one note in terms of the way it changes, the way it makes you feel. It's kind of a one note proposition. There's not like two or three different kinds of drunk that you can get from different alcohols, nor are there two or three different kinds of caffeinated that you can really get. Unlike marijuana, for example, where there are multiple different kinds that make you feel very differently.
But they really
or don't. So I'm told.
No, I think if you talk to people that are pretty into marijuana, they talk about terpenes, but it's mostly about how stuff smells.
Interesting.
So I think that the terpene thing, which is like some part of the plant, I don't know, if you ever want to just waste 2 or 3 days of your life, ask somebody who knows about terpenes what they are and have this just stoner explain to you for the next 2 hours. But it's some part of the plant. It gives it distinct, you know, how weed smells, and it gives it different smells and sort of flavors. And so if you talk to people about weed and you're like, oh, terpenes, they make you feel like this, make you feel like that. It's like, no, that's all just kind of part of the experience. I like this flavor or aroma of it the way I like different tobaccos or something.
So you don't buy into this like indica versus sativa thing?
No, I think that there are strains and that but basically everything is hybrid and it's all put together. And I think that if you scientifically try to pick a blind taste test between indica and sativa, you wouldn't find like, I'm awake and I'm asleep. It's just not that big of a variation.
Interesting.
It's like every kind of connoisseurship you can get down the rat. I am positive there are millions of people who believe in their heart and have said so, that there are very different kinds of drunk from different alcohols, that there is a beer drunk is different from whiskey drunk is different from wine drunk. And it's like, I could show you the metabolic process of alcohol in your body. I mean, we do it all the time.
And there's just one.
And there's one it goes through, you know? But I guarantee people believe that. So people believe all kinds of
things. Yeah, I suppose that's the case. So that's the first one where we're different. I choose alcohol, you choose coffee.
Yeah.
Number six, Microsoft Office Suite versus the Apple ecosystem. And by Apple ecosystem, I'm talking more about the software and the way it all fits together and so forth.
Apple. And this is something I want to talk about in depth at some point.
I choose Microsoft Office Suite. I really like the Microsoft Office Suite from Word to Excel is crazy in the things that it can do. PowerPoint is hugely useful. I'm heavily schooled in the Microsoft Office Suite, whereas I feel like a novice in the Apple ecosystem and I can't get any of the things I want or things that I do. The exception is GarageBand and iMovie, and those things are very, very good and very, very useful, but it can't hold a candle to the way that the Microsoft Office Suite is ubiquitous in corporate American professional life and the way that it is extremely useful. And as a product, I think it stands alone, really. I can't think of another product that is so dominant in its field.
Apple in any artistic medium.
I suppose for any artistic medium, you're going to prefer Apple, yeah.
Yeah, any Pixar itself is an Apple product, literally. Steve Jobs invented the Pixar computer and tried to invent things to sell it. And just instead created one of the most dominating and original film franchises in studios of all time. It was literally out of Apple. And the creative industry side is so dominated by Apple that it's insane. But you're right. And that's the problem with Microsoft, is that Apple doesn't convert very well to Microsoft, right? You can, but it's still a bitch. And so you have to go through all this kind of junk. But like, man, I'm not in corporate. I'm proudly not in corporate America. So I don't have to worry about how shitty Outlook is and how just decrepit and awful PowerPoint is just one of them. I mean, these are very, very powerful tools, but you have to be an expert. I mean, like, I think Excel might be one of the most useful computer programs ever devised by human beings, right?
Yeah,
it's amazing what you can do. If you ever hang out with someone who's good at Excel, I worked in fundraising.
It's incredible what they can do.
I worked in fundraising where it was a bunch of data of like trying to figure out who's going to do what and then set up all these things for like this really big arts organization. And there was a guy there. It was like magic what he could do with Excel. You could ask him anything you wanted to know with like an Excel spreadsheet and like a couple pivot tables and a few of these parameters here and there. It'd be like Bob Ross showing you a landscape. You'd be like, that's amazing what that can do.
Mm-hmm.
I've only ever used it for household budget and I've never actually finished the household budget. So I have no idea.
Okay. So we differ again on the back nine or the back four, we're completely different so far. Number seven, weddings versus holiday parties.
Holiday party. I hate weddings.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. It's funny how these last four are very different.
You found the divisive. Really?
I did. I didn't expect that. We were in sync on the first four. Really?
I have two weddings in my life that I ever even can remember enjoying.
Really?
Yeah.
I've enjoyed almost every wedding that I have gone to, in large part because you become kind of a connoisseur of weddings at some point in your life when you're in this, wedding phase where you're going to all these weddings. It's fun. It's personal. You meet the family, you hang out with the family. I don't really like to dance, but I will dance at a wedding. In fact, I hate to dance, but at weddings, it's fine. You drink a bunch, you eat a bunch of really nice food, you hang out with people. And if you're involved in the wedding party, there's this whole wedding weekend that comes along where you're like, you're hanging out with all the different people and you kind of create this bond that is extremely ephemeral and temporary with all these different people that are kind of part of this weekend with you. I just love the whole thing. I like holiday parties too. In fact, I like holiday parties an awful lot. We throw a lot of holiday parties, but to me, weddings are superior.
I find talking about how you know other people to be one of the just more difficult and tedious conversations. And then especially, I have a very tight-knit group of friends. It's about five people, and like full on two of them are not married and never have been married. And the other,
which by the way, unmarried people are one of the greatest assets you can have in your friend group as a married person, because they're always around and down to hang out.
Dude, it's great. And you just get perspective on things, you know, like the grass is greener. Well, they think, you know, there's all these things anyway, but like, I haven't been a part. I haven't been in a lot of wedding parties. I've been to a lot of weddings. So I guess if I was like an insider at a wedding, because I mean, I've been on those with some of my friends and family, but I don't know. I'm never in a groomsman party. I really just don't know that. So like, but holiday parties, like, man, I can get into the holiday spirit. I can absolutely be like, hey, it's fun. It feels like the end of the world for some reason. It's cold and we're all just willing to be like, hey, let's just put it aside for a bit. It's like one of the few things America almost always does is it just kind of gets to Christmas time. Just like Rome had Saturnalia, and we get there and just go like, it's okay. Let's just got to get together on it. You know, it's just like the one time like where it's like, fuck it. We're all nice.
It's true. Europe has that whole month where they take the whole month off and stuff like that. And
yeah, but it has so much prairie stuff in it though.
Well, but we don't do that. But what we do respect the holiday season. Everybody's kind of like, well, it's the holidays. You don't really need to work. You can kind of go to some parties and drink a little more and eat a little more and it's okay. And you know, everybody, you expected to gain 10 pounds during this period. If you don't, you know, you're fucking up. And
yeah, like the really horrible alchemy of avarice meets people's needs works so well at Christmas, where everybody deserves 5 or 10 minutes to drop the yoke of capitalism. And capitalism,
that's all you get in the US.
And capitalism needs you to do that to afford capitalism. Like, this is where we get in the black for the year. It's right at the end of the year. Our economy depends on it. So you have the social traditional forces of America in concert with the financial interests of capitalist America, which means it will never stop. It is perfect. I'm down with it. I love it. I think the holidays are great. I am just a huge holiday. And I don't care, Christmas, whatever. I just like the whole, it's cold outside and we're all going to have to just band together here and try to live it out. I like that feeling.
Yeah, me too. Okay, last one. Pizza versus the field. You're gonna have to define the field. For me, it's all other takeout and food options, but you can define it however you want.
Okay, all other takeout and food options versus the obviously dominant pizza. And I'll tell you, I'm an American. Pizza's pretty damn good. Pizza's, and I like it, but I will take the other just to have the variety of choice. The field. I'll go with the field.
I'm taking pizza, and it's not even particularly close.
Really? You're pizza. That kind of pizza?
Well, I had a bit of a realization recently, maybe a year ago, with respect to pizza, where I realized that probably pizza is my favorite food. And it's not the food that I would reach to the quickest of like, or that I would say I like the most necessarily. But when you consider how much pizza I've eaten and how often I eat pizza and how much I still enjoy, I mean, average American probably has pizza once a week, if not 1.5 times per week. Like, pizza is ever present. So I'm always eating it, and I've been eating it for my entire life, and I've liked it for my entire life. And so when you put all those things together, it's kind of like,
when you put it into the bracket, scientifically, pizza is what I eat.
Nothing really holds a candle to pizza as like a type of food.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm sure that's true for me too. Pizza's one of those things that's going to be like remembered in history, you know, as a time of like, there'll be 200 years from now, it'll be like just a known fact about the 20th century that everybody went crazy and created this thing, and this is all they ate.
What if that ended up being the main takeaway from like our century?
It could be.
Of like, well, humanity was doing all this stuff, and then it was Jesus Christ, and they had them all went crazy for that, and then they all went crazy for pizza, and that lasted about 200 years, and then, you know. All right, so the first four were completely in sync. So now we move to the second round. Live sports versus getting rid of daylight savings.
Daylight savings.
I take live sports. It's a major part of my life, and it's become a huge thing that I do with my son as well. And so live sports has more power to me than getting rid of daylight savings, as much as I would enjoy getting rid of daylight savings. Nice dinner versus blind taste test.
Nice dinner.
I agree with you. I got to go nice dinner. It's just such a great thing. When you sit down maybe once every 2 months or whatever to one of these really fabulous dinners with the bread and the wine, it's just the whole thing. It's just so nice. Okay, let's just finish up that side of the bracket. Nice for you, nice dinner versus getting rid of daylight savings. It doesn't have to be daylight one savings. Nice dinner, just really? Daylight savings? You hate daylight savings so much.
It would be so useful every day.
Live sports. sports versus nice dinner for me. I'm taking nice dinner. I love that nice dinner. I love that feeling of just continuing the good thing late into the night and the kind of soft luxury that the whole thing provides.
The gauzy haze of satisfaction.
Other side of the bracket for you is coffee versus the Apple ecosystem.
I could find other ecosystems, I'm sure. So I'll stay with coffee.
For you, holiday parties versus the field.
Holiday parties, indispensable. Coffee and holiday parties is all I need to be a true American.
All right. For me, it's alcohol versus the Microsoft Office Suite. That's a hard one, but I have to choose the Microsoft Office Suite.
That's the saddest thing I've ever heard. That's the saddest sentence that's ever been uttered. It's a hard call, but between alcohol, the pan-humanist way to deal with tragedy and triumph, or the Microsoft Office Suite, I have to choose the Microsoft Office Suite. You have no soul.
I can imagine.
I wouldn't even choose the Microsoft Office Suite over whatever the shitty one was. What over hotel? I'd rather stay in a hotel than have the Microsoft Office Suite ever again.
Well, I can imagine my life without alcohol and being sober and what have you. It's not a great thing to imagine, but I just cannot imagine my life without the Microsoft Office Suite of products.
Just oh my god.
So then weddings versus pizza. I have to choose weddings over pizza, as much as I love pizza. And I do.
You are going to be weddings. Real easy for the AI to take over at control. You're just going to turn it over to them. Just make my art out of this. Just whatever. Tell me what it is. Can you just show me some which Gryffindor am I?
So then for you, it comes down to good. Coffee AI. Versus holiday parties on that side of the bracket.
Holiday parties.
Wow. For me, it comes down to weddings versus Microsoft Office, and I'm going to choose weddings.
Oh, thank God.
So your final is getting rid of daylight savings versus holiday parties. What do you pick and why?
Holiday parties. It's my essential connection with humanity, and almost all of humanity agrees.
Wow.
I'm proud to stand by that. It's the best thing.
For me, it's weddings versus nice dinners. Oh God, that's a really hard one. I have to choose nice dinners. Love weddings. Weddings are wonderful and usually include a nice dinner, but they don't include the lingering over the brandy and the dessert and the, especially if it's a prefix menu where you get 9 to 12 courses and the wine pairings. And it's just such a wonderful feeling that if I had a choice between going to a $500 dinner and a wedding, I would take the dinner. All right, that's a wrap. Well, why stop at one bracket when you can have two? And Pete, we've got two for you today. And these are things that can be used in conversation by our middle bar listeners. It doesn't have to be limited to this podcast. You can try these out with your friends at home. So Pete, let's get started with the bracket.
I'm ready.
Fiction or nonfiction?
Nonfiction.
Wow. I have to go with fiction.
Interesting. And you're the continental philosopher. I am continental philosopher. You're supposed to be math.
We've had some complaints about our use of continental versus
analytic
philosophy. We've had some complaints that it's a little too highbrow, which is fair.
Is that too highbrow? Okay.
Well, why don't you explain it real quick? Continental versus analytic philosophy, just for the people who think it's too highbrow, explain to them why it's not and what it means.
The two major traditions in Western philosophy that stemmed from the Greeks going forward got more complicated later on when there are the continental philosophers, which is essentially the Germans and the French. And then the analytical philosophy, which is also known as Anglo, the UK, the United States, and a bunch of others. The main difference being the kinds of questions that they asked and the way in which they solve them. The continental philosopher is much more likely to believe that life has inherent meaning and that it is expressed through things like art, literature, music. It's much more morally flexible, etc., etc., etc. When you think of philosophy, what you're thinking of is continental philosophy. You're thinking of Nietzsche and Sartre and, you know, Descartes and rationalists and search for meaning and that kind of stuff. What the analytic philosophers do is just try to turn philosophy into a hard science, basically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this is like your sort of Nate Silver school of philosophy, if you will.
Yeah, exactly, right? It's like Bayesian analysis. It's political science. It's mathematics. It's falsifying science. It's probabilities. They try to define reality through knowable, solvable issues using logic and mathematics for the most part.
Yeah, so we had an example recently on one of our mailbag episodes where a listener Sam, asked about, what do you do when life takes on kind of a numbing sameness and mediocrity? And one response to that is the analytic response, which is what we gave, which is, hey, man, check your pharmaceuticals, go to your doctor, get a new med management person, figure out the way to get your brain humming again. Whereas there is an equally valid response, which is like, hey, the continental response, which is you're staring into the void. What do you do with that? And how do you make sense of just like life as a meaningless edifice that doesn't have any inherent meaning and to which you have to apply your own? Anyway, not to get too hung up on this stuff, but there's another way to look at that.
Yeah, I think it would deal with your just essential humanity. I mean, like Carl Jung would be considered a continental philosopher. And I mean, absolutely. Jungian analysis and therapy is intense, right? It takes a look at you're depressed. The reasons why are really interesting and might have to do with the way we look at the world and experience the world as human beings. That's the thing that science can't tell me, is how I interact with the world. It can tell me what the world does in response to me, but it doesn't do anything about my objective reality, which, you know, I think the continentals are right. It's called into question.
Yeah, so Jungian depth psychology would be a perfect example of a continental response to depression, whereas cognitive behavioral therapy would be an analytic response to depression. How do you deal with it? What do you do with the symptoms, and how do you improve upon the ways that you feel in these very concretized and scientific ways? Or what pills should you take?
Yep.
All right, next up, Beatles versus Stones.
Stones, every time.
You take Stones.
Absolutely. Without question. It's not even close.
I think you've got a Beatles problem, man.
I do. I don't like them that much.
You don't like the Beatles?
Not really. I certainly don't mythologize them the way people do. And I find them to be just absolutely over-scrutinized, played, done. I am sick of it. And their music was always just perfectly in tune with middlebrow sensibility. So I get it. But like, man, the Stones are a much cooler band. That is a band with actual expression and feeling and emotion. It's like when I hear the story, people love telling the story. And I don't know why they love telling it. They're saying that Paul had this idea in his head for the song Yesterdays, right? Yesterdays, love was such an easy, you know, it's like this song that if you play it, every boomer tears up at and starts like crying and rending their garments.
Yeah, yeah.
And when he originally wrote it, he was just like scrambled eggs, because he would just like throw in nonsense lyrics. And they go back and write it, and people take this thing personally. It's like, dude, they're a hit machine. I don't know why they're the first and probably best, but by the way, they're the least interesting. And I love that the boomers are going to just drag this thing to the ground. I love it. They're going to come up with who's doing it? They're doing four.
Yeah.
Goddamn four Beatle biographies. Like, that is my favorite thing. I will see none of them. And by the time it's done, it will kill them, bury these weirdos forever. The most talented member who died in 1981 and was an absolute bastard of a person.
Whereas to me,
how about that?
Whereas to me, the Stones are like Kim Kardashian or Paris Hilton. They're famous because they're famous. They don't have any real songs that people actually care about, let alone albums. I say that knowing full well that there are some very, very good Stones albums and some decent Stones songs. But to me, the Beatles are just so pitch perfect. They're just so on point, and they come up with this stuff, and it's just, you just look at their whole career, and it spans 10 years, and that's it. And within 10 years, you go from this boy band who's creating these awesome, like, hit love songs to being like a kind of like, hey, we're starting to experiment with LSD, and things are getting a little trippier, and to becoming like full-fledged, by the time you get to Abbey Road, full-fledged genius. Just like, you cannot make better music than this. It's impossible. Whereas the Stones, to me, are just kind of overhyped. There's maybe like four songs in the canon that belong on your all-time mixtape, if that. And the Beatles are just this perfect thing that's never been replicated and never will be replicated. All right, so you pick Stones, I pick Beatles, fair enough. How about this next one? Total victory in the Ukraine versus peace in the Middle East.
Total victory in Ukraine.
You and I are in agreement on that.
I think one will solve the other.
You think so?
I do. I think that the totalitarian expansionist ideas of China and Russia in order to survive, China in order to dominate. Like, I think if you're able to stop that kind of strongman thing in its tracks and really put it back, you take one of the biggest weapons out of North Korea and Iran funding Hezbollah. I mean, there's just, it's so connected, that like Iran, Russia, China, North Korea quartet, that if you could really just show that Putin doesn't have it and he can't attack the world and just take over what he wants, that he has to deal with an objective reality with an emboldened NATO, that would do a lot lot to calm down China, do a lot to calm down Iran. I think it would calm things down the Middle East too. But I mean, I don't know.
I think you're right that total victory in the Ukraine would get China to back off of Taiwan.
Taiwan and some of the South Pacific.
Yeah. I just think that peace in the Middle East isn't such an improbable thing that even if you were to somehow establish peace in the Middle East, it would come unraveled really quickly.
Total victory in Ukraine would stick, man. You'd make them NATO and you'd start building up against them and would start going south.
And also just Putin is such an asshole. And in the Middle East, there's all kinds of different factors and all kinds of different people and forces at work that, like, you just can't do that. You just can't have peace in the Middle East. Whereas Ukraine, there's one dickhead, Vladimir Putin, and that's it. Like,
and he's a threat to every one of his neighbors.
He is. And he just needs to be rebuffed and defeated. And so we are in agreement on total victory in Ukraine over peace in the Middle East. Next one, Trump goes to jail for 20 years versus Putin goes to jail for 20 years.
Trump. America's a much bigger deal than Russia. As dangerous as Putin is, and as nice as I'd like to see him put up, Trump is the perverted head of a drastically dangerous force if the United States is turned into that. If the United States becomes Russia, the world's done. I mean, we have this, we're a war machine, for God's sakes, right? You have to be controlled by sane, empathetic, thoughtful people, or else everything goes wrong. The United States is like just a giant ass pit bull. You got to know what you're doing with it. And having Trump out there, I mean, Russia can be disruptive and dangerous and cause a lot of suffering. If Trump goes to jail, the United States will be able to drastically refurbish its reputation and bring its like leadership to a better place.
You convinced me. I'm going to agree with that. It's a tight one for me because Putin's such an asshole.
He is.
I think you're right that Trump is worse.
Trump's megaphone is bigger. The potential damage he could do is larger. And the level of bringing the United States down versus bringing Russia down, like those two things are not equal.
No, it's true. As long as the United States exists in this world in the way that we know it and the way that we appreciate it, Russia is not that big of a threat to the global world order. However, right, if you've got Trump in office and Putin in office, you've got a real big problem. Number 5, exercise or TV?
Exercise, but that's new for me. I used to be TV, but now I'm exercise. I'm all exercise these days in my old age. I'm in the best shape of my life here at almost 50.
We're in agreement on that. I love TV. TV is great, but exercise.
I do too. Don't get me wrong. It's not like I don't have a TV. Like, dude, I watch a lot of TV, but I make sure I exercise every day. And given the choice, I'd almost always take the exercise now.
No, exercise is awesome. And what I frequently combine exercise and TV. I get on the Peloton and I watch whatever, Breaking Bad or White Lotus or whatever.
Do you do that? I remember when I started, my little InShape journey has kind of changed. I have this part. Like, I like to do strength training. I like to like lift weights and stuff. And I'm not bodybuilding or anything like that, but it's like, it just requires like a tremendous amount of focus and effort for these short periods of time. And then you get to increase weight. So it's like you're overcoming these real small goals all the time. So it's really satisfying. But like for solid state cardio, like you're going to ride a bike for 45 minutes. You're like, dude, I just want to distract myself. I'll put on whatever I can to not think about it. Like TV.
Yep.
Podcasts, what, yep. Like I love that time.
No, and so I agree with you. For weights, you're probably not watching a lot of TV, but for low impact, long distance cardio, which is the vast, vast majority of what I do, TV is great. Right. To enjoy at the same time.
No, I love it.
Or podcast or whatever it is. And exercise is king. Donuts or ice cream, Pete?
Ooh, there's a great question. Ice cream. And it's close. It's very close.
I'm taking donuts.
Yeah, donuts. Donuts are hard to beat.
For me, it's not close. I love donuts. Ice cream is one of those things where I struggle a lot with self-control.
Really?
And with willpower and exerting willpower over food in particular. I have a huge struggle with that, which is why I need to get on Ozempic, Mounjaro, Wegovy, or some equivalent, because I need the food and ice to just go away. But I do not struggle with ice cream. I have no problem resisting ice cream. It's one of those things that I've just put in a very specific box, and I'm like, the calories and sugar is not worth the taste factor. Like, I'm just okay. I have no problem resisting ice cream, but donuts are so good, and I can't resist them, and I love them. Why do you prefer ice cream over donuts?
I don't know. I have the exact opposite. Like, I have a real control problem in and around ice cream. And I'm not talking about like chocolate ice cream. I mean, like, you get me like some of that Ben and Jerry's action with got all the stuff in it.
Dude, Cherry Garcia belongs on my list of perfect things. It is so perfect.
It's incredibly good.
Like, those are the kinds of things I'm talking about. If you've got, like, stuff that you can kind of mine as you're eating, right? Like, ooh, yeah. I got a cherry. I got a big chunk of chocolate. I got a piece of pretzel dipped in fudge. All of a sudden, and you wrap that thing up in sweetened milk that's frozen. Dude, that is delicious. All of it milk chocolate. What are you going to do? That's America, baby.
Mint chocolate chip or moose tracks or any of those things. And
I like peanut butter cup ice cream. Peanut butter and chocolate ice cream, I love.
Simpsons or The Wire?
The Wire. Simpsons was so good, but it just, man, if you've watched Simpsons recently, I've just like, this is just, oh, God damn it. It's just depressing. The Wire is probably the best TV show ever made.
I'm going with The Wire as well. And if you were to take Simpsons season, what, 4 through 9 or whatever, where it was just,
yeah,
perfect.
it's like 4 through 9 or 3 through 9 or something like that, where it's like they were breaking all the rules of television. People are still copying the Simpsons formula from that time. It changed television forever. And one of the things it really did that I like is I'm a big fan of animation, especially because I think that animation tends to highlight storytelling above looking good and being fancy and being in cool places, which TV shows tend to do. So The Simpsons legitimized adult animation. Like, you had like Conan O'Brien as the head writer. You were doing smart, crazy, thoughtful, provoking stuff. Like, if you like any anime, if you like Family Guy or Bob's Burgers or any of those things, which I do, that's all due to The Simpsons.
I think The Wire did not change TV, sadly.
It just showed how shitty TV was.
It is the perfect TV show, and there's 5 seasons.
Yeah, there's no question.
It's so good, and there's 5 seasons of The Wire, and all of them. There's no other TV show you can say this about. All of them are roughly equivalent in terms of how good they are. They are all so good.
I don't know about that. I agree that they're all so good, but I still think the first season is so clearly so good that it stands above. I think it's easy to say, like, what's the best season? That first season's the best one.
Really?
I think so.
I disagree with that. In fact, rather strongly. I think, I don't think it changes. I mean, the one thing that they do, and the White Lotus is now trying to cash in on those, which the White Lotus to me is an attempt to cash in on certain features of other TV shows that are really good. Like, they try to do a little bit of Curb Your Enthusiasm, where like you hate all the characters and everything's awkward. They try to do a little bit of the OC, which is the first season of the OC is one of the great series in all of television. And the ending to that season is so perfect. And the ending to season one of White Lotus, they completely and unashamedly try to co-opt the ending of the series one of the OC, and they don't really succeed. Season one of the OC is so good in the way that it ends, but they also try to do a little bit of The Wire, which I appreciate, which is that there's a real change up with each season that comes along. Every season is different in that it has different characters and different, and there's like a similar vibe, but they completely change it. True Detective also tried to do that, but True Detective doesn't pull it off. Sadly, the first season is the only one that matters. And after that, it's like,
spectacular.
Yeah.
Have you seen the newest one, though, in Alaska with Jodie Foster? I haven't seen it, but like, that's exciting. Jodie Foster doing like a crime thriller is at least an interesting idea. Like, I haven't seen her since Silence of the Lambs do anything like that. That's kind of cool, but maybe it's just bullshit. I don't know. I haven't seen it.
Strangely, the problem with season 4 of True Detective, honestly, is Jodie Foster.
she's what's wrong with it?
Yeah, the acting is really poor. And she leads the way on that. And
wow.
It's incredible how much good acting matters in TV and in movies. It really, really matters. I watched the first 3, maybe 3.5 or 4 episodes. I haven't finished it. It's not good. And it's because the acting is bad.
That's wild. I mean, I consider Jodie Foster a pretty good actor.
I know, but she just doesn't bring the goods.
She's phoning it in?
She's phoning it in or something, or she's trying too hard. Or it's hard to say exactly what.
I don't see. That's the thing. Like, you got to get, like, what worked so well was you took Woody Harrelson, who America forgets about every like 7 years. We let him off. We don't think about him. And then all of a sudden he shows up in something and it's like, bam, Woody Harrelson's back. And you're like, oh my God, he's so dominant in everything he does.
So he's good. Great.
He'll do like some tour de force, you know, The People versus Larry Flint or something. And then he'll just show up in the background being just awesome and hilarious, like for another 5 years, where it's like, no, he doesn't do good stuff. He's just America's crazy uncle in the background who's back there like in Zombieland. And and all that stuff. But dude, that season of True Detective, you're just like, oh, Jesus Christ, Woody Harrelson's so good. He's such an American treasure.
He is. And it's not just Woody Harrelson, because Matthew McConaughey in that obviously steals the
show. It was also
show.
Kind of the McConaughey turn too, right? McConaughey was getting serious at that time, as opposed to just being the himbo that he had been like for the last 20 years. Like,
but The Wire is 5 seasons of perfect, flawless television. So The Wire wins over Simpsons unanimously.
You know what? Can I tell you what my favorite scene from The Wire is? This is seared in my memory.
You've told me. We've had this conversation.
No, I'm not going to tell you. I'm going to save it.
No, I know what it
is.
For
listeners.
No. I'll tell you mine.
What is
it? You tell me yours. Okay. I'll tell you yours and mine. So yours, your favorite one is the one where, and this was a bit much for me, but like the one where, I think it's in season 4. So McNulty obviously marries up with Beatty, the port cop, and he kind of gets straight, but then he falls off the wagon and he starts picking up women at the bar and stuff. And then there's this one scene where he gets super drunk and he drives home. And he's driving home and he comes flying around the corner in his police cruiser.
Just full speed. Full speed 90-degree turn.
And he's
just tire screeching.
Yeah. And he slams into the bridge and he just smashes his car into the side of like a pillar of the bridge.
He kind of loses control of it and gets too wide and hits the bridge pylon.
Right. You take it from here. Where does it go from here?
So then he just gets out of his car and he takes like 4 or 5 steps back and he's looking at it. He's looking at the bridge and he looks back up the street. He's looking down the street. He hops in the car, throws it in reverse, burns out, goes back up, and then tries to retake the corner going really fast. And there is just, I know that is like so inappropriate. Like I shouldn't be laughing at a cop drunk driving, right? Obviously. But this idea that he's like, God damn it, I'm pretty sure I could have had it. And he tries to do it again and fails and then does it a third time. And
what does he
it,
say?
Right?
What's the line he says?
Yeah, he's like, I got you, you son of a bitch. He's like screaming around the corner. Car is just trashed, bumpers coming off, mirrors missing. And he's just like, damn it. It's very McNulty.
And he does it again. He smashes again. And the other one, the one for me, the perfect scene from The Wire, of which there are frankly many, but the perfect scene for me, I think it's in that same season 5, which is funny because season 5 isn't necessarily the best, but I think it's from that same season 5 where he's sitting there, McNulty is sitting there talking to Beatty, to his wife, and she's given him this whole thing about how like family, Jimmy, the people that show up at your funeral, the guys at the bar or the girls at the bar, they're not going to be there. They like, Jimmy who? Oh, he died? Oh, no, bummer. Like, family and a couple of friends that are like family. That's all the best of us get. And it's this whole thing. And it just touches me so deeply, this scene. And you got to go watch it. And friends and family listeners, which, let's be frank, is all we have at this point, text me and I'll send you a clip to that, because I keep one handy on my phone, a clip, and I'll send it to you. And it's so good. It's just this scene where it's just like, let's stop and think about what actually matters in this life. I love Beatty as a character and I love McNulty. And that whole scene is just the absolute best. Casablanca or The Big Lebowski?
Casablanca. Although I love The Big Lebowski.
I'm taking Big Lebowski. And it's not even close.
Mm. Dude, Casablanca means more to me today than it ever did. This is like, Casablanca is basically, Rick is the United States. The United States is very cool and very aloof and very outside the world's problems, right? Until it decides to go in on it. And the scene where Rick comes down and lets them sing the Marseillaise, like the French national anthem, to overcome the Germans doing it. As an American, hearing the French, it makes me cry every time. And it's like, Viva la Liberté. And Rick just comes down and he's like, I said, go ahead, play it. It's just like, it's so awesome. Casablanca is just cool. It's just, it will never not be cool.
You're right.
And it's cool in the way that like America's never that cool. And in Casablanca with Rick and his white dinner jacket coming down, I'm reasonably sober. He has a line in that movie where this woman comes up to him at the bar and she says, where were you last night, Rick? And he says, that's so long ago, I can't remember. And she says, where are you going to be tonight? And he says, I never think that far ahead. There is no way to be. And he says it with like a smoke hanging out of his mouth and a bottle of bourbon in front of him. And he doesn't say scotch or whiskey. He says bourbon like a goddamn American. It is so great. Also, one line, because I don't even like the end all that much. Like, Louis, it's a wonderful friend. Yeah. Cheese. The part of, perhaps we'll invade America someday. And he's like, well, you know, Sturmfuhrer, there are several parts of New York I highly recommend you avoid. It's just... Ha ha ha. And he gets Ingrid Bergman, he gets the Scandinavian chick, and then gives it up to the freedom fighter.
It's perfect.
It's classic America.
It's a perfect movie. There's no question that Casablanca is a perfect movie. However, The Big Lebowski is also a perfect movie. I would argue that scene for scene, Big Lebowski is more perfect. There's no scene in that movie. This is like the guy who has no excess body fat. It's just all perfect. It's so lean, and it's just like there's nothing.
Yeah, but it doesn't stand for anything. That's the problem.
Well, that's the beauty of it. But that's the beauty of it, is that Casablanca takes like an obviously overdone, overwritten moment in history where, like, how easy is it to make a movie about the Second World War? Well, there's a lot to work with. The Big Lebowski takes that same attitude and about 1992 California, where there's nothing going on and nothing matters. And it creates a perfect movie out of that moment, which is not that's a true. Moment at all. Every scene in that movie, every line in that movie is so perfect.
That's the thing. There's nothing wrong. I don't know if it adds up to much. Because what do you take away from it? What do you walk away from the Big Lebowski with? Like a sense of what?
I walk away from the Big Lebowski with vastly more than I walk away from Casablanca, which is a store of perfect scenes, perfect lines, perfect images that I say over and over again. And I repeat these throughout my life every day.
What's the theme?
It's the dude.
Right. Okay. So what are they trying to say with that movie, do you think? Anything? These are just showing you, like, isn't this cool? They got all these stuff, and everybody...
Sometimes, Pete, sometimes there's a man, and I won't say a hero, because what's a hero? But sometimes there's a man. He's the man for his time and place, and that's the dude in Los Angeles. It is just like, you can be perfect.
Check for that carton of milk.
That's right. While listening to the thing about Saddam Hussein and across this line,
it's the Gulf War,
a
really.
Line in the sand, right? And it's just this. It's just, you can make perfection out of nothing, absolutely
that's
nothing.
True.
And the Coen brothers have done so much of that throughout their career. But movies will never be better than The Big Lebowski. Okay, you pick Casablanca, which I admit is fair. Casablanca is great. I pick Lebowski. So time for the second round for you, nonfiction versus the Rolling Stones.
Oh,
what do you pick?
Nonfiction. Nonfiction's better than the Rolling Stones.
Why?
I mean, you know, it's like how I learn about the world.
For me, it's fiction versus the Beatles.
Good
defense of your position there.
I mean,
for me, it's fiction versus the Beatles. That's a real hard one. I'd like to pick the Beatles. I really would, but I have to pick fiction, because fiction includes Murakami, it includes Jonathan Lethem, it includes Lonesome Dove, it includes Philip Roth, it includes a lot of stuff that has been very impactful to me over time. Okay, total victory in Ukraine or Trump goes to jail for 20 years.
Jesus, that's a tough one. If I were to pick total victory in Ukraine, Trump could still lose, right? It doesn't guarantee him anything.
Yep.
So it's just symbolically, what's a bigger deal? Trump 20 years or total victory in Ukraine? I'll go Trump 20 years. That's probably the best thing I can think of for America.
I'd pick total victory in the Ukraine just because I think that Trump has a decent chance of losing. Trump versus Biden rematch is actually a rematch of a contest that Joe Biden won the first time around.
Yeah.
So I think there's a decent chance Trump loses anyway. I would love for Ukraine to just completely just defeat Vladimir Putin and just eject him from the entire thing. So you pick Trump, I pick Ukraine. Okay, for you, exercise versus ice cream.
Ooh, exercise.
Good for you.
Yeah.
For me, exercise versus donuts. There's no question I'm picking exercise on that. Exercise is the major and dominant force in my life. I love exercise. Donuts are just kind of like sometimes that happens and I can't resist it. All right, tough one for you, sir. The Wire versus Casablanca.
I'll take Casablanca.
What?
Yep.
Did you just take Casablanca?
Yeah, I did. Over The Wire, sure.
Holy crap. Casablanca over the massive edifice that is The Wire.
Man, The Wire is really good TV, but it's still just really good TV. Casablanca, like, changed film and American patriotism.
So for me, it's The Wire versus Lebowski, and there's no question for me it's Lebowski. So we both took kind of the same route on that one. Semi-final. For you, nonfiction versus Trump going to jail for 20 years. What do you pick?
Well, Trump goes to jail. I think I want Trump to go to jail more than anything, so I'm pretty just going to stay that.
For me, it's fiction versus total victory in the Ukraine. I'm taking fiction because because of the pure impact that it's had on my life. Foreign policy has a limited ability to impact our lives in a very direct way. It's interesting. It's fascinating. We like to think about it. We like to read about it. But I like to read about fiction more than I like to read about other stuff. Exercise versus Casablanca.
Exercise.
And I'm sorry, but I'm taking Lebowski. No, I'm taking Exercise over Lebowski, which is really hard for me to do because I love the Lebowski. It's the piece of art that is almost most penetrated by consciousness. But Exercise has been it for me for the last 10 years or so. The only thing I care about really is exercise. Okay, so for you, the final is Exercise versus Trump going to jail for 20 years. What do you pick?
I'll take Trump going to jail. I'm doing it. I'm going to run the table. I'd give up Exercise if Trump went to jail for 20 years.
You would?
I don't know. But I really want him to go to jail.
All right. Pete sends Trump to jail. He will not exercise. For me, it's fiction versus exercise.
Ooh.
I have to pick exercise. And honestly, it's not even that close.
All right. Exercise.
So exercise beats out fiction, nonfiction, Beatles, Stones, total victory in the Ukraine, peace in the Middle East, Trump going to jail, Putin going to jail, TV, donuts, ice cream, The Wire, The Simpsons, Casablanca, and The Big Lebowski. Exercise is the champion. And for you, sir, Trump going to jail beats out all of those things.
Fuck 'em.
Fuck 'em. Hey, thanks for listening to the Middle Ground Multiverse. If you'd like to join our army of subscribers, you can do so at patreon.com/middlebrowmultiverse. There's a free option or a paid option that gives you access to bonus episodes that you enjoy.